Welcome back to another episode of Better Than I Found It, the podcast all things college golf. You're listening to Mike McGraw, the men's golf coach at Baylor University. Today's guest, Scott Limbaugh of Vanderbilt, has compiled one of the very best records in all of Division I golf over the past 10 years. His teams have made it to match play on six occasions since 2015. Scott is a great example of how someone from humble beginnings, from small school golf, can achieve great things in our sport. He shares his thoughts on that part of his journey, but also his perspectives on recruiting and his philosophy on team practices. Scott is one of the very best, and I think you'll easily see why after listening. I hope you enjoy. Okay, everyone, join me in welcoming Vanderbilt men's golf coach Scott Limbaugh to the podcast today. Scott, hey, thanks for, you know, taking a little bit of time out here just to chat about your career and about coaching in general.
Coach McGraw, thanks for having me. Feel like I hit the big time getting to hang out with you on your podcast. So thanks so much, buddy.
Well, I've been wanting this for a long time. I've had some other pretty heavy hitters, and I keep on thinking, Scott Limbaugh's as heavy as they get. Let's get him on this podcast.
No, you got me right in line where I need to be, at the bottom of the barrel, buddy.
Well, you're in a pretty good spot. So before we, and obviously in the introduction, I talked about your accolades as a coach, all the awards, all the different things that have come about in the last 10 years at Vanderbilt. But most people really don't know you're a small town guy and you came from small town roots and everything about you was small. It was not big time. It was small. And it was awesome. Tell me about growing up in Childersburg, Alabama. That must have been great.
Well, yeah, it really was, Mike. And when you introduced me that way, it touches me deep because that's the foundation of who you are. You know, where you're raised, how you're raised. I grew up in a small paper mill town, population of about 4,000. We got two stoplights, don't have a Walmart. So, I spent summers cutting grass early on and then pulling, paper out from under paper machines out at Kimberly-Clark during the summers. And I just say that to say those things, they shape you. You know, my times played all three kind of main sports throughout high school and golf was always secondary. But the people that helped shape me, coaches, the community, those are humble beginnings that you truly, when you get on this side of life, you look back and you think about all the little league coaches, all the basketball coaches, all the members at Coosa Pines that would let me play in their little money games those kind of things shape you. And I couldn't be more grateful for that.
Well, I'm with you. I didn't grow up in a town quite that small, but Ponca City, Oklahoma was about 23,000 people and it's the same size today, but I went back this fall for a Hall of Fame awards ceremony that was just unbelievable because I got to go reconnect with a ton of people I hadn't seen in such a long time. Yeah, where you grow up, that's really huge. It does shape you. So I'm glad you're proud of that Childersburg, Alabama raising. But, you also then played small time college golf as well. You played at Central Alabama and Huntington College. So talk about your playing career in college and then we'll take it sort of toward the coaching part.
Yeah, I think I was fortunate to be offered a spot. I always knew I just was always the guy, Mike, that if I got on the court or I got on the field, I was the hustle guy. So I just knew I wanted to continue to play. I got to be on a team. That's where I thrive. And so I remember the coach at Central Alabama at the time of my recruitment was Maxie Bowles. I think Maxie might have won 4, 5, 6 national championships at Central Alabama. And I called him and he said, Hey, Scott, I tell you what, I'm going to send you out here. You can play 18 holes it was Will Swift and Carl Peterson is who he had me play with. And those were really good guys. Old Carl Peterson went on to North Carolina State, was a finalist for the Hogan Award 1 year after. But point being, he said, if those guys come to me and tell me you're good enough to be on our golf team, you can be on our golf team. I have no idea if that's legal or not. I don't think Maxie much cared. But anyway, went out and played with those old boys and I guess they thought that I was good enough. So long story short, yeah, I go on and play at Central Alabama. I was always just fighting to be in the van, Mike, my entire career at Central Alabama. Now, we were good. And we won the national championship both years I was there. And so we had really good teams. Had three or four guys went in the SEC. Guy went to my roommate goes to Alabama. One of them goes to Florida State. Point just being, I learned to kind of fight for it and dig in for it. But I was used to that and played for John Sadie there at Central Alabama, and then went on to Huntingdon. Wanted to continue playing there. That's where I maybe had kind of some bigger offers to maybe walk on, but I knew I wanted to be able to play to affect the team the most I could. So had a great experience there as well, and then right after that, I was not good enough to play professional golf. And right after that, the coach at Huntingdon offered me a spot to stay on as his assistant coach and finish my degree kind of as a fifth year deal, Mike. And then boom, next thing you know, he leaves to take an athletic director job. And they offered me the coaching job there when I was 24 years old.
You know, another pretty great coach in the history of college golf started at 24, and that was Mike Holder at Oklahoma State, and he wasn't ready for it. I imagine you probably weren't ready for it either at 24.
There's nothing about me that was ready for that, Mike. But you know, you just learn. You're coaching guys that you just finished playing with, and you just kind of learn, and you try to learn to be humble and trustworthy and things like that. And just the only thing that's changed about me is learning from your experiences, right? You do dumb stuff, you learn from it. That worked, you learn from it. Oh, that didn't work, you learn from that. And so I just think that's what I've tried to continue to do no matter where I've been. I don't view myself any differently, Mike. I don't have anything figured out. I just trying to be me the best I can. And sometimes that's not good enough. And every now and then it is.
Well, you've done a great job. And, you know, you mentioned something about, you know, you had a lot of energy. I've always thought that was the most important aspect of coaching, was loving it. Absolutely. I mean, I ask young coaches who say, hey, coach, you know, how do I get to where you are? You know, how I want to be there someday. I said, well, you got to be willing to crawl across 5 miles of burning hot coals just to get to practice every day and ask the head coach, what you got for me? I mean, if you don't have that attitude, then you don't want to coach very bad, right?
There's no doubt, because it's not that glamorous, Mike. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people would think that you and I have awesome jobs and so thankful, but there, you got to roll your sleeve. And I tell you one thing that I noticed too, Mike, is when I'm out and about, and I want people to, because I'm still, Mike, if I'm around you recruiting next week for 18, I'm going to ask you some questions. I just am.
Yes, sir.
And I'm always, it always, you know, when I have assistant coaches move on, the first thing that comes to my mind when hiring somebody to come work, you know, did that old boy ask me, who asked me questions when I've been out recruiting, and who's always not been afraid to come up? And I remember when I first got my whole career, but when I first got to Alabama, scared to death, intimidated by everybody, you never ever forget, Mike, the people that don't think they're too big time to talk to you. And I mean, sir, from the bottom of my heart, you were always one of those people. And you never were too big time to talk, Mike. And you don't ever forget that. And so I certainly try to return that, you know, whether it's somebody that emails me and says, hey, I'm the coach at whatever, you know, I've been there, buddy, wherever you are. I've been junior college, NAI, coach division III. I've been to all of it. So I'm not too big to talk. But you got to have the courage to come chat too. You know what I mean, Mike?
Absolutely. You know, you mentioned that. I remember those conversations we had when you were you were a young assistant coach for Jay. And we're going to talk about that story in a second. But the main part of this early part of the interview for me, because you are a big time coach, you can't deny that. You haven't changed. You're still Scott Limbaugh, but you've done big time things and you've coached some amazing players and you've had amazing teams the last 10 years. Well, it didn't start out that way. I mean, you were a junior college guy, a division III guy coaching. And I want young coaches to know there is a pathway. You can get to a higher level if you do it the right way and you connect with the right people. And your story is perfect for that. But let's talk about connecting. you got with Jay Sewell somehow. I know you're in Alabama, but how in the world did that story come about?
Well, you and I know Jay pretty well, and know he's not quite on top of his mail every day or quickly to reply. But he gets it all together. It can just kind of come together last minute. But we talked about kind of talking to people and who would talk to you. Well, when I was, at Huntingdon, I would, you'd only recruit at tournaments you could drive to, of course. And so rather that would used to be a tournament in Montgomery called the Blue Gray Tournament or, Future Masters. But wherever I saw Jay, he would talk to me. He would always talk to me. I'd be like, "Hey, coach, will you tell me how you do in Alabama golf practice?" And of course, I'd run do it at Huntingdon the next day. Whatever he said, I'd writing it down on a scorecard, and I'd go do it the next day. Whatever. And well, after my third year at Huntingdon, I just wrote Coach Sewell a note, a handwritten note, which I still firmly believe in those, Coach. I just wrote him a note and just said, "Coach, congrats on another great year. So excited to see the progress you're making. I want to pursue coaching at the highest level. If there's anything you ever hear, a way you could help me get in the door with anybody, please keep my name in mind." And I wrote that in early May after the Division III National Championship, and they still had to play through the whole month of May. This was 2007, and
They
anyway.
contended there too at the national championship.
That's right, they did. And first year Michael Thompson had come there. And so anyway, fast forward 3 months. It's the end of middle of August. I'm back in Childersburg doing a golf camp, trying to make ends meet for myself. My salary was $20,000 at Huntingdon, and I'm doing a camp, and I look at I didn't have Jay's cell phone number or anything like that, and but I my cell phone had rung, and looked at it and had a message, and it was from Coach Sewell, and he said, "Hey, Scott, this is Jay Sewell from Alabama. I just opened up your granted 3 months later. I just opened up the note you wrote me. I really appreciate it. Give me a call at your earliest convenience." So my earliest convenience was 10 minutes ago. So I mean, I called him the second I got the voicemail. And Mike, he just kind of said, "Scott, I opened your letter up on the same day that Christian Newton told me he's going to go back to work for Bruce over at Georgia Tech. And I just, I believe it's divinity that you want to, that I opened this letter on the same day. Can you come down here tomorrow to interview?" And I said, "You dadgum right, I can." So I got in my car, drove to Montgomery. I was sitting at Buzz Phillips, my athletic director's office at Huntingdon, that morning when he showed up to work. I was sitting right there at his office door and just said, "Buzz, I just wanted you to know that I'm headed to Tuscaloosa to interview for the job." So did that, headed to Tuscaloosa, walk in there. Jay's giving Jerry Pate a golf lesson. I'm already intimidated, scared to death. He keeps giving the lesson. So I just kind of stand around like, what world am I in? Where do I fit in here? Well, after about 30 minutes of that, we end up sitting down in Jay's office, talked. It was easy. Interview went great. Jay says, "Hey, I got a lot of interest in this job. I'll be in touch." Well, Mike, I hop in my little Honda Accord. Before I got to the interstate off McFarland, Jay called and offered me the job. And and he said, I have the feeling that you're the guy, and I want to offer you the job before you get back home." He said, "Will you accept it?" And I said, "Yes, sir, I will." And thus kind of that was, when people believe in you, Mike, and I still carry that with me today. When it doesn't matter if I'm coaching my little boys' basketball team, when though I want those players to truly believe that I believe in them, because when people believe in you, it means the world. I would have truly that coal you were talking about crawling through, I'd have done that for Jay and still would.
Yeah, that's a great story. What's great about it is that letter stayed on his desk for 3 months.
Yeah, I'm lucky he opened it up that quick,
Yeah, well, you know what though? I think about the times I spent with you and the year I spent with him, and I've got to think it was almost cataclysmic in that office because I remember even with an old stuffed shirt like me, Jay and I had fun every day talking through that wall and singing to each other, and it was just like a blast. Did you guys ever slow down?
No, we were dangerous. I got him drinking coffee. He thought he could keep up with me. He'd pour about 10 of those French vanilla creamers, little creamers, into one cup of coffee. And he'd be jittery and bouncy. And shoot, he and I still cut the greens every morning for practice. We had the best time with that, set the flags like we wanted it. And, you know, he was always a great, like, practice, you know, had great ideas for practice, and would argue over, not argue, but good argument, you know, the kind of banter you want. I think that's why he liked me. It was because I didn't just always bow down to his ideas. Yeah, you got it, coach. That's exactly right. Like, I would, you know, stand up to him in terms of, you know what I mean? Obviously, always respectful, but also saying, well, I kind of like this other kid we're recruiting a little better, coach, or what, you know what I mean, Mike? That's what I want. I don't need people around me telling me I'm right all the time. You know what I mean?
Because you're not
I
right
think
all the time, Scott.
that's, you better believe I'm not. You should come to my house one night.
Boy, don't we know it. Hey, so obviously you could go on for hours about, because you were there several years with Jay. But I mean, there's got to be a bunch of stories, and maybe for another complete podcast, because I want to kind of get through some other information here. But obviously you taught each other things. What's one of the best things he taught you during those years together?
Well, I just think that first thing was just kind of teaching me how this, you know, SEC world works, you know, how SEC golf, or, you know, big time golf. I don't mean to make it the SEC, but, you know, that was a pretty intimidating thing for me. Taught me some of the philosophies I still carry over in recruiting. We never tried to send letters to everybody, recruit everybody. It always needed to be personal. Taught me that. And then I think on a bigger level than that, just, you know, everybody talks about their little culture and family and all these words that get overused and everything, but Jay really showed me what it looked like to for your own family to be a part of that larger family, and he lived it out. You know, Stephanie always had a big hand, was always around, and, you know, I watched his kids grow up around, and those are the things I still carry on with me today. It's just fine for my little boy to come out there in the middle of Vanderbilt golf practice and tee it up and chip with them and play with them, and that's what you want to do, you know. And and so those are the things that I really I think I learned the most, you know. And I'll be honest with you, you know, just talked to Jay last night as he was flying back from California. You know, he calls me when he got there. So I do think friendships, you know, we had something that's lasted, you know what I mean? And
Sure.
that's when something's a little bit more authentic.
Well, I know it's authentic because you guys are competing for a lot of the same players. You're competing for the same championships. You're in the same neighborhood. That's a great relationship that can persevere through that.
Yeah, and we're competitive. He wants to beat the dog out of us when we play, and we want to do the same. You know, we faced off maybe three times at the SEC championship match play through the years, maybe even more than that. And, you know, and it's you know, you go get yours, I'm gonna go get mine, but there's never gonna be a level of that took away from a respect when it's all said and done. You take your hat off, you shake your hand, and life keeps moving forward. You know, that's always been really important to me with our assistant coaches. I mean, I've, you know, with having Dusty at Mississippi State, Gator at Kentucky, I want to fight to always preserve that. It's going to be competitive. We're going to do battle, and that's great. That's what sports is about. But there's also a bigger level to this, and we're also going to protect our friendship too.
Yeah, and you guys were in the trenches together. You're with your assistant coach. Just because he's coaching now at another school, that's what you wanted for him. You know,
Right.
you wanted that for him. So it's like there's no reason. Now, it doesn't mean you're any less competitive. You still want to do that, and you are one of the most competitive guys I've known. You truly are. But another competitive guy that you ran into while you were in Alabama was Nick Saban. And Coach Saban, I had three or four interactions with him and loved every one of them. I felt like maybe I was just trying to be a sponge. I don't know, but. But tell me about what you got from Nick through the years.
Yeah, a lot. You know, he kind of made, you know, the practice facility out there kind of his haven to be away from everybody, and I think be normal and be viewed as a 10 handicapper and not, you know, the maybe the greatest football coach of all time. But a couple of things, just his detail. Like, you couldn't just tell him to, you know, hey, I'd like you to widen your stance up a little bit, turn a little more. He would always want to know the why. I think that would give you a little picture of, you know, he just sweating the details. He was obviously always has done that. And that's, I think that's what made him so successful. And, you know, I think about the very first time he came out there too, was the, it's truly, we don't, but Coach Sewell, just the way he treated Coach Saban, giving him that first lesson in the Bay and didn't really bow down to him a lick, you know, just, put your tee up, put your ball on your tee. Let's go. And I want you to do it right this time. You know how he does. Let's go. You can do it better than that. Let's go. And I truly believe, because Jay treated him just like another old Joe that day, that's the reason they always had an unbelievable relationship. And, you know, and Coach never really told, if Jay asked him to meet with a recruit or whatever, he never really told him no, because Jay was real with him, didn't coddle him, you know.
Yeah, you know, there's value in that. I remember all the people in the athletic department at Oklahoma State would come and ask me, okay, how do I approach Coach Holder? What do I say? What do I do? And I was going, are you kidding? Tell him right. What you think. And as long as you can back it up with facts or information or whatever, he'll respect it. But they were all afraid of him. And they shouldn't have been.
Right. And I'll add this too, on top of that, fast forward, Kate and I went down to Brooke Sewell's wedding maybe 4 or 5 years ago. Forgive me, I don't know exactly when it was, but that means I had already been left Tuscaloosa for, let's call it 8, 9 years. Well, Coach Saban's at that wedding when I run into him at the, reception after the wedding or whatever. And just to tell you how much that man gets, I would have bet money he wouldn't have had any idea kind of who I was, but it wasn't much, Mike, but he looked at me right there as he's getting a piece of cake or something. He said, congrats on all your success. Good job. Keep it up. You know, and you're just like, what? Wow. You know,
how would he know that?
Right. Right. Does he, I didn't know he knew who I was really, you know what I mean? But obviously he did.
Well, you know, when I got to Tuscaloosa for that year I spent in Alabama, I said, Jay, I really do want to meet Nick Saban. I think it would be fantastic. He said, well, I'll take you in there right now. And so we were waiting in the little office outside his office, and he came out and he says, Mike McGraw, come on in here with me right here now. It's about time we got us a golf coach here at Alabama. And he walks in there and he shows me this framed $5 bill that Jay had to sign because he lost it. It's up there next to a national championship award.
That's so good.
It's like, are you kidding
right.
me?
I love it. He talk a little trash now. Don't kid yourself.
Oh, boy. What do you
have?
Well, so you got to see and do a lot of great things while you're in Alabama. And one last thing, I know you were involved in the recruitment of Justin Thomas, but you got to coach him his freshman year. Just the most impressive things about Justin, what are they?
I think his competitive spirit. I will always say that. You know, you talked about whatever, you mentioned me being highly competitive, but he had another level. And from day one, these freshmen come in and golly, I mean, Jay and I were having nervous breakdowns about whether he was going to qualify for that first tournament. You know, you're watching because you want to do it the right way. You want people to earn their stripes. And, you get over there as coaches and you're following these players around. And Jay was like, oh, Scott, we're going to look like the dumbest coaches ever if we go to this tournament. Justin Thomas isn't there. Or maybe I said that. It doesn't matter. But the banter, you know how the banter is.
Dude, boy.
Believe it or not, he found a way to kind of get through that qualifier. And we go to the first tournament over there at the farm, and he also found a way to win that tournament in case we were wondering whether he needed to be playing or not. And I think a lot about just he always wanted to compete. I mean, he and I would sit out there after practice and play makes and play makes and play makes. And I mean, he'd wear me out, you know. He called me low side Limbaugh and you know, and all of that. But and then I would just think about, you know, you'd get your first winter day, cold, rainy, off season day. And old Justin still be out there knocking, you know, doing a putting drill. You know what I mean, Mike?
I do.
He's one of those guys that you don't become the best in the world without having a little different meter. And he had that meter. And you just always knew it didn't matter. National championship, the farm, the shingle, he was there to play. And, you know, he wasn't worried about anything other than putting his tee in the ground and beating everybody there. And I really thought, having the other guys we had around him at the time, Corey, Bobby, Trey, Hunter, Hamrick. I mean, these guys that just raised the bar all the time, and you had to show up, or it didn't matter if you're Justin Thomas or whoever you were, you better show up or you were going to get beat that day, whether it was at practice or qualifying. And you know, that's the way you get better, Mike.
Yeah, and somebody was on 59 watch about every day at Indian Hills.
That's
It seemed
right. Yes, sir, they were every
like
day. Yep. You didn't
somebody,
want
I
to
don't
shoot
know who it was.
you didn't want to shoot you a 3 birdie, 2 bogey, 68 out, 68, 69 out there. That wasn't going to end well for you.
That was going backwards. So, well, anyway, I'm glad you said that. I love Justin. I think he's great. And I'm thrilled with his recent good play. I think he's got 4 top 5s in a row. He's back. He's going to be fine.
No doubt. He sure is.
Hey, speaking of recruiting, because you helped get him to Tuscaloosa, if you could give a young coach just some things, and I realize it's different at every school because you were recruiting different kids at Huntington than you were at Alabama, that maybe than you are at now at Vanderbilt. So it's not the same kids, but what are you looking for? The main things you think you're looking for in a player, and what's one major red flag that just turns you the other direction?
Yeah, great question. And I've thought that through pretty thoroughly. And I think there's two sides to it. There's a physical aspect of some things that I look for, and then there's the more emotional, mental stuff that I think you're looking for. And I think first of all, being at Vanderbilt, kind of a world-class academic institution, I just say that to say everybody's not necessarily interested in doing all of that. So a lot of guys get kind of, they know about our golf program, but nah, I don't know about the class part. You know what I mean? So there's that. But I think just watching, you want to see, for me, looking to see how resilient guys are. And by that, I just mean what their bounce back ability. When something goes awry, how do they handle that? Because inevitably we're recruiting, these young guys, and you're gonna go through a dark spot in this game, as you and I both know. So how do they handle that? You also want to see kind of their toughness. And by that, I would just say their ability to stay in the fight. That's what I would, you're going to stay in the fight today, because if you can't stay in the fight, you can't play here. We will 100% replace you if you can't stay in the fight. And then there's all these other things. I think, are they looking at their parents after a bad shot? Are they worried about, I'm a little bit more impressed when they're just kind of locked in on playing the next shot, doing their thing. And it's almost like, good for Coach Limbaugh and Coach McGraw. They're getting to watch me today. You know what I mean? And you, that confidence of just, I got this under control. I think, and I'm always learning about that in a first phone call too. Like, were they confident? Were they not? What were the signs they were? I'm always just writing down little notes when I'm talking to people. Did they ask any questions? Was it all about them? Things like that. And then from a physical perspective, I think for me, first things, just ball flight, speed. I think you're looking for some of those things. And then I like to see a young person that kind of knows how to hold a shot. If it's a left or right wind, are you able to hit a straight shot or a little draw up against it and left or right, just little things like that. I've said that about William Mall several times, but that was what early on with him just jumped off the page to me, watching him out in high school postseason. And I just saw a little guy that just kind of knew how to hit golf shots. And if you find a young person that knows how to flight a wedge and control the spin, that's usually a different level. But I also think, Mike, there's the gotta get guys, and then there's the lower level guys that can do one of those things physically that you're like, well, shoot, there's a building block there. Like, we can build around that right there. And that attitude he's got, good. Yeah, he's not winning this or that, but boom, up Trey Mullinax comes to mind,
Oh boy, oh
and
boy.
when he, anybody that can hit their driver, this was before everybody was hitting it forever, and he's still hitting it 310 and on a line. Well, if he learns to do anything, if he gets in this little competitive environment and likes it, that dude's going to be unbelievable. And, couldn't get in the van for his first year, but by the time he was a senior, he's ranked number one in the country. Things like that. I think to me, there's a few little different answers for you got a top guy in a class, you got a next guy in a class, and if you're doing three in a class, you're trying to look at the upside of somebody there. You know what I mean?
Yes. You mentioned the physical part of it and ball speed. And so I know you're a smart guy, but you didn't have to be too smart to see that Gordon Sargent had some speed. Come on.
No,
Are you kidding me?
I think my wife could see that, and she's not much on ball speed, you know. But funny enough, with Gordon, he just kind of been a winner his whole life too, and that the speed for him really came about kind of during the COVID break, and he started getting longer. He always kind of had these feet that you're like, well, his dad's a big guy. When he starts filling out a little bit, he's going to grow into those feet, and he could become a monster, And ultimately, that is kind of what he became.
He did become a monster. There's no doubt. What a great player. I actually walked with him in one of his first tournaments at Colonial his freshman year. I was walking with one of my freshmen, Zach Heffernan, and it was very impressive to see. And he didn't play particularly well, maybe shot about par, but he was very, very impressive. And I'd seen him in junior golf, but I knew he was ready. So thank you for that information about recruiting, what you look for. But what's one red flag you're just going, oops, I'm sorry, I'm out of here. You have one?
Yeah, I mean there's several for me there's several of them, and I think you can afford to be kind of picky in who you choose to recruit, right? I mean I mentioned some of this earlier, but just little things that bother me are slamming my club. I don't mind competitiveness, Lord. We've had very imperfect players here through the years too. You're trying to help them be better. Doesn't mean there's always forgiveness and things like that. But just if I ever see a player talking back to a recruit talking back to their parents or something like that, or just not having respect for their competitors out there, not doing the right things, slamming clubs all the time, just getting too worked up. Those are things that you look for, and you'd prefer not to see, parents that's life and is wrapped around that next shot. And listen, I'm all three of my young children. I've got a 13-year-old daughter named Mally, a 10, 11-year-old daughter, Annie, and an 8-year-old little boy, Thomas. They play in all the sports. And I get it. Like, if you're watching them play and you just feel different, I mean, but just really, you just don't want your identity to be that. You don't want it to be how well they play in this in the seventh grade JV game tonight, so I just think those are red because that's not going to go away. You know what I mean, Mike? And so you want people that care enough to follow up to do the little things. Kid comes on a visit here, sends me a handwritten note. We're gonna talk to that person again. I don't care if we don't think they're good enough or not. That's the little things that you try to do, and then you continue once they get here. It's still the little things, right? It's the little things that make the difference that separates you from good and great, in my opinion. And they got to
Wonderful.
be coachable. You got to
Yeah,
be coachable.
definitely coachable. That's, there's a saying out there, uncoachable kids or players become uncoachable adults. So it's like that just keeps going. You've got to find kids that will listen to your coaching. I've got a young man on the team right now that I'm meeting with once a week, and he's really, really coachable, but he's got a long way to go, and he's got some things we're working on that I think will pay dividends in the long run. But when talking about these kids you're recruiting, so let me step back and say I'm a Baylor. We see you guys probably in your group maybe once or twice a year. At Baylor, we get paired with you occasionally. We were paired with you at San Antonio this fall, and have through the years competed against you at a lot of tournaments. And I always notice your players seem to be very intense but extremely disciplined. So we just talked about recruiting. So some of that is because you recruited that, right? But how much of it are you coaching? The intensity, which is the competitive, maybe you recruited that. But I mean, how much of that is because I see your kids always in the game. And if a kid shoot a really good All-American shoots 77 one day, I look at my assistant coach and say, that kid's going 67 tomorrow, 100%, because you always feel like they're in the game. Intensity, discipline, and opportunities, your challenges become opportunities. Are you coaching that or are you just recruiting that?
Both. I think you are trying to find that. And first of all, Mike, I greatly appreciate that. I would take that from somebody like you as a great honor that you would even think that about some of our teams and our competitors. But we I think that's a fiber of what we try to be about here. And we had early morning workouts today, and we're just going to always do something at the end of that that you got to learn to push through it. You might win, you might lose. That's okay. That's sports, but we're going to push through something hard together. And we're going to do it. We're going to do it this afternoon at practice too, by the way. And I think that just becomes over time, you're always trying to extend that fiber to the next people, to the next generation. And if you're doing it right, then it gets passed on each time. But because you just, it doesn't really, there's a difference in giving up, giving in, and not. And we're just not going to give in. We're not even going to talk about giving up, but give it like, this game is going to, it's going to punch you in the stomach and make it hard to swallow for as long as you play it. And we do things constantly just about competing and talking. Big thing for me is letting our players have a voice. And I understand I'm one of those voices, Mike, but I really, through the years, have tried to do a much better job of letting, you know, these player-led teams go a lot farther. They're a lot tougher. They care a lot more than the ones that are just, you know, hanging on to that the coach-led team all the time. And I really want our players to have that voice, that say, and it help these younger guys understand, what's that mean? Well, I mean, I'm 3-over through 4. Great. Find a way to shoot 2-over. Find a way to get one back here. And then, oh, we got those 2 par 5s, but don't be thinking about, I'm 3-over. This guy's already 300. That doesn't matter. None of that. All that matters is you putting one foot in front of the other and giving us everything you got. There's a scoreboard. We all know that. And you got to learn to play with the scoreboard too. But during this time of your life, we're fighting for each other and fighting for our gold bag. And that's mattered to a lot of people, and it needs to matter to each one of us now too.
Very, very, very well said. And I hearken back to a time when you were at the national championship and you were celebrating with a player, and there was a certain journalist who said we were just bus drivers. And I know you remember it quite well. I hope he listens to this podcast, because I mean, honestly, that's coaching. What you just described is coaching at its base level. And everybody needs to understand, no, I'm not perfect and you're not perfect. And you're not always going to say the right thing, but you're always trying to coach your player. And that's why your players are getting better, Scott.
Well, thank you. And it's funny you brought up that the old van driver. Yeah, I remember sitting with you that very next morning, Mike, in that, I don't even know if you remember that, but the morning after that, we won that match and then got beat in the afternoon there against Oregon in the semifinals match. But yeah, I just remember you, you and I just having a little chat there, and I just appreciated your classiness in that moment, just an understanding. We had a really great team and it ended, and it wasn't even really about that other deal, but it was just more, you just remember those people that take a moment to kind of say, buddy, I know it doesn't feel like it now, but man, it's a great year. You know what I mean, Mike? You don't ever forget that.
Totally. I totally get it. You know, another thing I was going to say, we were talking about a kid earlier that, that might have attitude problems on a course, slamming a club or whatever. And I'm not going to mention his name, but there was a young man that you had a verbal commitment out of. And I was at the U.S. Junior recruiting and you were watching him. And I said, wow, you're going to have some challenges. You said, I know. Can we talk about this? And you and I talked about it. And I said, well, if I were you, Scott, I'd start coaching him now. I wouldn't wait until he gets on campus. Just start it now and tell him how things are going to be. Do you remember that conversation? I'm sure you remember the player.
100%. I'm locked in on exactly the conversation. Learned a lot in that moment, because I think, you know, I was still very young in my journey here at the time. And, you know, you get a little bit a prisoner of the situation. You know what I mean, Mike?
Yeah,
you see a talent, you know how good they are, and you know, buddy, we got to have that kid. And so you get a little afraid to kind of have the hard conversations. I'm just being honest, but your encouragement that day was really, really great. I could tell you the exact hole. I know exactly where we were, what hole it was, and what happened. And you know what? And largely I did. I confronted that head on, and I thought, you know, that situation never going to be perfect, but there was a lot of growth that happened there. You know what I mean?
Oh my gosh. And what a player. He became an All-American, right? First team All-American.
Four times.
Yeah. Just an amazing situation. But I want other coaches to know that it's, once you get that verbal commitment, you may as well start recruiting him now or coaching him now, because you're getting a head start on his career if you do it now.
There's no doubt. You know, even to this day, I'll catch myself thinking, I saw something that old boy put on social media, or one of my assistants will show that to me. And it's like, your first instinct is, do I say anything? And you know what? I'm just like, heck yeah, we're going to say something, because that's not going to happen. They represent us now. You know, that's the thing I talk about with our guys at first team meeting every year is, you know, everything you do, there's a billboard on Interstate 65 right out here. It's a big one, and it says Vanderbilt Golf. And every decision we make, good, bad, or indifferent, goes on that billboard for everybody to see. And you know, it's the same thing. I mean, once they're part of your deal, your family, your team, they're part of it. And you know, you don't want anything that to represent that in a bad way. You know, you want that to be positive, because it represents all of us.
Oh boy, that's so well said. And you know, and that social media is a billboard for more people than would see it there in Nashville, right? I mean, so a lot of people are going to see it. Coach them when you get the verbal commitment start. Plus, if you get a verbal commitment and you start coaching them, it's less likely they would ever decommit if they know you're coaching them already.
That's absolutely correct. And they know you're not afraid of kind of them, their scene, their, you know, it just something simple like, you know, recruit sends me their wedge numbers or something. Well, take a second, actually pay attention to it, and say, well, you know what? Are you working on some flighted wedges? Are you hitting draws? Are you working on different flight? You know, I just think little things like that. Don't just like it and move on. You know, when you have time, you do have to spend the time, especially if these are guys that you're wanting to come in and play right away, because or they talk to you. The guys that you tend to struggle here, Mike, I feel like it's a lot of times that was my fault because I didn't force communication there. I just thought, oh, they're going to be fine. They're mature. They're this, they're that. Well, sure enough, they come in here and we start, you know, they just get into this, and you know, inevitably that it just takes them a little longer to adapt. And then the guys that kind of talk to you all the way through, you know?
Absolutely. You know, I told Johnny Kiefer when I first got his commitment that he was an All-American, and he has been, and he's in his fifth year right now. And I believe that from the start. I wanted him to know you are an All-American. So
He's a good one too, buddy. Wow.
yeah, I'm gonna hate seeing this senior class leave. There's three kids here that are fifth year COVID kids that I'm not gonna see, love having them walk out the door. But anyway, we
In
talk
that
about
boat too,
players.
Mike.
Say it again.
I'm in that boat too, buddy. It's like I want this spring to slow down because we got some guys here that, you know, got Matthew Riedel and William Mall, fifth year guys, Cole Sherwood. These just the guys that you feel like you've been fortunate enough to be alongside them forever, and you just really want it to slow down and just love every minute of it. Just special, special people.
I got news for you. It ain't gonna slow down.
I know, I know.
Not gonna do it. So, but players, I've got so many instances through the years where a player has inspired me for whatever reason, and it doesn't even have to be broadcast. But I'm gonna ask you today for what's one of the most inspiring things that's ever happened in your coaching career with a player? And it doesn't have to be a golf accomplishment. Doesn't have to be.
Yeah, that makes me think a lot. I'm sitting here in my office on campus this morning, and I just remember a really hard conversation when I was about 5 weeks on the job, right here in this same office with Hunter Stewart. Hunter finished his freshman year here, and I knew of Hunter's talent because when I would go recruit Justin up at watching play some high school stuff up in Kentucky, there would always be this other kid playing with him, you know, that could get his ball in the hole and you know, and beat Justin a few times. So fast forward quite a few years, 5, 6, 7 years, and here I am, and here Hunter is sitting in this office with me and with his dad, John, who could very well be, you know, one of the greatest golf dads there's ever been. Just, man, you just here's my son, coach. We love him, but we also trust you. I mean, you know, that doesn't get any better than that, you know?
That's
And,
good.
just a conversation, just sitting right here, you know, and I was kind of come in, kind of be the tough guy and, you know, try to help change things. And, And Hunter was like, you know, coach, I'm kind of thinking about transferring. It just wasn't what I thought it was going to be here. And I said, buddy, I understand that. And I said, Hunter, I want you to know this too, buddy. I don't care if you transfer. If you're waiting on me to sit here and beg you to stay, I'm just not that person. Because I can tell you this, it's going to get hard. Others are going to want to leave. I'd love for you to be a part of it. I'm going to love you every step of the way, but I'm not going to beg you to stay. And anyway, he made a decision there to stick in here with us, and just what he was able to do over the course, became a first team All-American, became the number one ranked amateur for a little time there, won the Northeast Amateur, did a lot of big things, carried us to our first NCAA appearance, first match play appearance down there at Concession in 2015, I believe. But point just being, I just, you know, and now he's still in the game, you know, doing a lot with these tour guys, helping guys. What he does the most is, you know, he had two top tens on tour, but certainly his game, he started thinking he needed to hit it higher and kind of lost his way, self-admittedly, after, you know, getting his seven tour starts or whatnot. But I think just inspiring. He is stuck in there. Like, he's working with a lot of the best players in the world now, helping them with their stats and just showing them their strengths, weaknesses, where they should play from, how they should do that, and just doing a great job. So I think back on moments like that of a guy like Hunter that chose to do this with us right away. There was no reason to want to do this with me. There wasn't none. And he chose to do it anyway. And man, did he play some big boy rounds for us, Mike. And just, I just love that boy.
That's fantastic. Great story. You know, that's a hard conversation to have literally in your first month on the job, but it paid great dividends for you. Who's your all-time favorite coach and why?
Ooh, follow a lot of great coaches, Mike. I think that, you know, I'm a big believer that, you know, success leaves clues. So I'm always paying attention to what the best coaches are doing, saying, winning, losing, all the above. I'm always doing that. But my all-time favorite coach is Big Mal, my dad.
That's great.
Just think about, you know, playing for him, for the Reds. Look, he's kind of a legendary baseball coach in Childersburg. And man, he's just got a way of making things fun. He still does that. If he's at my house, he just, you know, he's kind of famous in college golf now for the boom shakalaka. And
I've heard it a lot.
And John Fields, there's not a time that I see John and he doesn't ask, how's the boom doing? Not one time does John not. And he just laughs about it. John's like, that is so great for college golf. And, but that's just, my dad's grown up like Rascals, worked his whole life selling hardware, you know, week to week working to support our family. And when he comes to watch college, he did it when I was at Huntington. He's just the same person, but it's just, that's where my son is. I love those boys and I'm coming to have fun. I'm taking a day off from my time, and so I do think a lot of the way I am, and, you know, certainly a level of holding guys accountable, but also a level of, man, we got to make this fun. I'll sometimes look at my assistant coaches and I'll say, I don't care what else happens, today has got to be fun. And I think that's just part of coaching, is knowing, you know, the same old, like, you got to be able to offset that with the day they think they're showing up for a regular old Wednesday competitive practice, we might need to have a ping pong tournament. And I think a lot of those things I learned from my dad, that's just what he's done forever. And in my mind, he really is a great coach.
That's great. I love it. My dad, had he been a high school golf coach or whatever, he was a club professional, but I know he would have been a great coach because I was always so uptight on the golf course. But anytime my dad was around, I was not uptight. He had the most best calming influence of anybody I've ever seen. And he was funny, funny kid. All right. Best piece of advice another coach has given you, an opposing coach, any piece of advice that stands out? And you don't have to say the name, but if you do, that's fine either way.
Yeah, I think advice that I carry with me, a lot is just to be who you are. And I think, not really try to be somebody you're not. Like, you're always trying to grow, just like a player is trying to grow in whatever areas they may not be their best. Well, their main, whether it's your driver, your putter, your whatever it is, we've all got certain snipers that you have to rely on in your golf game. But I think it's the same as a coach. Don't try to be something you're not. And I think when I try to, I just have always felt like, Mike, that players see through that. And I don't try to, there are certain things that I know I'm not the best at. And I don't try, I try to get better there and support there and be there, but I don't try to ever be somebody that I'm not. And sometimes there's, you have a lot of self-doubt or in those moments, man, I see that coach, good gracious, look how good they are at that. And look how great he is at this. And, but you know what? That's not me. And so I think that's something I've carried. Somebody told me that early on in my coaching journey, and really paid dividends for me when I got this job right away. Just who I am is what helped open this door for me. Don't try to reinvent the wheel. You just keep kind of chopping wood every day and learning, and and you just hope that that growth mindset helps you mature as a coach in your journey.
Yeah, that's really good advice. Whoever gave it to you, that's wise. But it's also really the only way you can be authentic to people. And kids are really intuitive. They'll figure it out that you're trying to be somebody you're not. They will figure it out.
For sure.
Yeah. Okay. Before we're gonna do a speed round here to kind of finish up on. But before we do that, take me through your spring schedule. I hope we get to see you someplace. Where are you gonna be?
Well, we're going down to the Watersound Invitational in Panama City Beach. I think Florida State and Alabama host that. First time we went down there, we're going to start there kind of second, third week of February. Then we go to Cabo.
I'll see you there.
Yep. Then we're going out to San Diego for the Palma Valley Invitational. That'll be kind of at the end of spring break, kind of a new tournament. Then we're going down to the Valspar. We host the Mason Rudolph first weekend in April to round out our, kind of spring season before, SECs, regionals, and then hopefully nationals.
Wow. Well, that's a great schedule. You're kind of got things all over the place there too, going to Cabo and to California. Really good.
Yeah, we're going to travel a good bit, and we got a team that these guys really want to play against the best, obviously, as much as we can, and I want to give them every opportunity to do that.
Good job. Okay. The last thing I'm going to do with you is a speed round. I haven't prepared you for any of this, so
Okay.
we'll see how quick you are on your feet. Ready?
Yep.
Go to fast food.
In and out.
In and out. Wow, we've got one right next to campus here. Shawshank Redemption or Remember the Titans?
Ooh. Remember the Titans.
That's a good one, isn't it? That's a good
It's a
coaching one.
good one.
Yeah. Favorite pro sports team?
Atlanta Braves.
Atlanta Braves. That's from your down your part of the world.
Yep.
Favorite course you've taken a team to compete on? Favorite course?
Favorite course to compete on. Man, it was recent, but the old course at St. Andrews in October was one of the cooler experiences I've had as a coach. I thought it was amazing.
Wow. You live in Nashville, so you should know a little something about country music. Luke
Yes.
Bryan or George Strait?
Luke Bryan.
Okay, I got news for you. You and I agree on a whole lot in life. I mean, tons of things I see just like Scott Limbaugh sees them. I'm going to
But
disagree with
I want to say this. I did see George Strait in concert in Nashville back in October and loved it.
you.
But I
Okay.
got to go Luke Bryan on that.
Okay. All right. You're killing me. Favorite Jay Sewell quirk? I mean, like funny thing or odd thing, strange thing.
Funniest story. He was dry. We used to travel everywhere in a big old Winnebago van somehow or another, and he'd be driving that thing. But somebody said, "Coach, did you hear me?" He said, "I can't hear you. The sun's in my eyes." And I mean, boy, we dogged him about that forever. But you know how he'll just say something, and you'll have to process it for about 3 minutes to think, "Now, what did he say?" And he thinks I'm supposed to know what that meant. So
It's
I don't know if it's
he
just
got it
certain things.
right. They're both two of the five senses, seeing and hearing. So
Right,
he
right.
got
Like, I couldn't hear you. The sun's in my
it right.
eyes.
Okay, one fact about you that nobody knows. There's no way I know this fact.
Wow, one fact about me that nobody knows.
I'll give you the one when I answered this question.
Okay.
I won the sixth grade spelling bee champion. I was a sixth grade spelling bee champion at St. Mary's Grade School.
Wow, that's a great. I went back to kind of grade school, high school as well. I think I would go that I was homecoming king my senior year at Childersburg High School, 1998. Homecoming
Wow,
king.
boy,
Forgot the
you
homecoming king.
that was big time stuff right there.
You know
All
what? I mean, seriously, yes, crown and everything, babe.
Last, absolute last question. Dream foursome, you and three others. Who are they?
That's I know everybody goes down the alley of Ben Hogan or and I get all of that, but you give me one round and I gotta go. It gets a little tight, but because my younger brother kind of doesn't love playing golf anymore, Sloan as my dude, but dude's pickleball's taking over for him in life. So I'd probably have to go with my older brother Ryan, my dad Big Mal, and my little boy Thomas. That'd be my that's my dream foursome right there.
Have you had a home visit with Thomas yet?
Buddy, we're locking in on it. I tell you what, he's a little lefty, Mike. He'd look good in green.
I'll tell you what, I'll save a scholarship for him, but I'm going to be 74 when he gets here, so just be sure I'll be a little older.
You'll be a. You keep doing those push-ups and sit-ups. Everybody still think you're 44.
Okay. Well, I hope you believe that. So, Scott, it's been an absolute pleasure today just to talk to you. I've been waiting for this interview for the longest time. So, thank you very much, and I can't wait to see you in Cabo.
Can't wait, Mike. Maybe you can buy that steak you owe me down there.
Yeah, we need to talk about that. All right.
All
Okay.
right, buddy.
Thanks. See you.
See you.